We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Rock Pile Report podcast. No, there was no intro for tonight's show. Do you want to know why? I don't have a producer. In fact, as I'm sitting here recording this tonight down here in my basement bar, Chris is preparing to take the big plunge. You know, he's not here. And if he was, I'd never be able to get away with doing things like this. He would literally edit that out of the podcast. I mean, we wouldn't get any some trombones. There would be no... Who doesn't love a fake laugh track? I mean, come on. He would also edit out of this podcast everything that I'm about to say. Tomorrow, I'm going to watch my friend get married. And I am incredibly happy for and proud of my buddy Chris. Like, I'm not sure, but there's a really good chance I'm the oldest friend that he has here in Western New York. I know his parents. His mom and dad send us cards around the holidays, and they're wonderful people. And I've gotten to know them. I've gotten to know his family. I've met his brother, his wife. I've been around for a lot with Chris. Like, Chris and I, our friendship is kind of, it's kind of funny because we have this, admittedly, a love-hate relationship with each other. And yet at the same time, I was there when he went through his divorce. In fact, that was actually the start of our friendship, was when he was going through some problems with his wife and we were starting this podcast. And then their marriage dissolved. I was there when he went through that, and I know how, despite at times, like, he has this emotionless kind of thing. Like, we always joke, he and I always joke about being dead inside. Now, those of you who have met us in person can probably guess that some of that's just tough talk. Some of it's real. I mean, I have the sociopathy, I don't know what you want to call it, but I can shut it off. Like, there's definitely just like a light switch. You can just turn off your empathy, but... And so I don't know what that says about either one of us, but he's also got some feelings deep down in there. I know the way he struggled. You know, the same way we all have when you're alone, especially after something like that. I watched him go through that. Like, I'm sitting here with a glass of tequila. In fact, Nick, if you're out there, I'm killing the last of the tequila you brought me this football season at the tailgate. Thank you very much. The stuff is delicious. That's one of the cool things, too, about not having Chris around. I get to just drink my cocktails, right? Oh, three ingredients in a coupe. No, here's a cocktail for you. How about this? I got a three-ingredient cocktail. Glass, ice, tequila. Boom. It's never failed me. So, like, I remember the early days of Chris after his divorce, when he decided he was going to put himself back out there. It was right at the beginning of our podcast. And I remember, like, kind of like how if you're a dad and you're going out there and you're going to take your kid and you take the training wheels off the bike and you push them down the sidewalk and just see how far they can make it before they crash. That's what he and I would do with the early days of, like, hey, I'm going to put myself back out there through these dating apps. You know, he'd match with a girl and get all excited, and I would start a compelling conversation with the young lady. And then it would be on, I'd turn it over to Chris, and we would just see. And in fact, sometimes we would make bets on how long he could keep the conversation going for before he said something off-putting or like something that we found hilarious, but it was just offensive. And just killed the vibe and just got him unmatched. I remember those days. I remember there was a night where we got hammered at Soho. My wife was our DD. Some of the guys from New Jersey had come in. You may remember them if you remember the AFC East Bros podcast. Gary. Gary from AFC East Bros and a bunch of his friends from Jersey came in. And of course, they want to go clubbing, which you don't really do a ton of here in Buffalo. And so we took them to Soho. And it was funny because at the time, like, I think Booby Dixon was there when we were there. And it was like weird. They're like, hey, aren't you, we're going to see him play later. Aren't you supposed to be at a hotel? I don't know. I feel like there's something you're supposed to be doing right now, sir. But Chris just annihilated and dancing. Like, to see Chris Krueger dance, like, for a guy who claims he's an athlete, he dances like Elaine Benes. If Elaine Benes was trying to do the robot. And so to watch this unfolding in the middle of Soho and having these women who were dressed to the nines walking through the door, and as they're walking by, Chris is just saying the most off-putting thing, like shooting them finger guns and just saying the most off-putting things in the world to them and the looks of horror on their faces. And like, you could tell he was finding, like, it was hilarious to me and my wife and all of our friends. Those women probably had their nights ruined, but who cares about them, right? Our friend was finding his mojo. He was getting it back. And I also remember how he would balk at the idea of ever getting married again, of ever putting himself back out there to allow another human being to hurt him the way that he had been. You know, he would absolutely, like I said, he would cut all of this out of the podcast, especially if you heard me getting a little misty-eyed, just thinking back about my buddy and just the way that he's grown. And I've gotten to be a part of that. I've gotten to watch. I lost a Seagram's bet to him because he met his wife to be. And I think I had to drink a 6-pack. Maybe it was a 12-pack. I don't know. I just know that it definitely put me closer to diabetes because they met. And the fact that she knew about it in advance and played along with the bit was just like proof that, like, okay, this woman understands. Like, what seems like an impossibility, she understands and somehow accepts this. Maybe this can work. And so to find out that my buddy was going to pop the question, and then knowing that, like, seeing the way that he's become, like, just, he stepped into the role of, I don't want to say stepdad, but him and her son, they're like, it's like that movie Cop and a Half. They really are. And it's just, I'm so incredibly happy for my buddy. And so he's abandoned me to do this podcast on my own. But I'll tell you what, I couldn't be happier for it. And so it's with that that I raise a glass. And if any of you out there are drinking right now, I urge you to join me as we toast to Chris and his impending nuptials. Guys, sláinte. And so with that, we start what is supposed to be a Buffalo Bills podcast, or as I like to call it, Uncle Drew's Hack Radio Hour. That's right, folks. All the way in the back. Bring it down. So NFL free agency has been going on, and, you know, Ryan Lacel and I last week during our show kind of hit this. The fact that most free agency signings that are going to get announced, or that you're going to see come across the ticker, or that you're going to go to ProFootballTalk.com for some reason. Mike Florio sucks. But you're going to go and you're going to take a look at these things. And you're going to see deals getting announced. And I would say more than two-thirds, I would say it's probably closer to about 6/8 of these deals are going to be ultimately meaningless in the way the NFL season plays out. Most of the names that are changing teams won't end up making a monumental difference in the outcome of someone's season. A lot of them are depth moves. Just because, like, realistically, if you take a look at the ticker, you see just how, what you see is just how many players there are in the NFL. You're seeing names that you didn't even know existed. And you're like, oh, this guy, he's being signed to, he's moving and leaving one franchise and going to the other. You're like, I didn't know he was here. We didn't know you existed. And then there's like your, almost like B celebrities. You have this tier of football players who I think honestly make some of the biggest differences. And they're those are the kind of the under the radar signings, but they make such a difference in terms of the flexibility for a team, right? Like there's signings that are depth. Then there's signings that are for, hey, I just signed a starter and I spent a bunch of cash. And then there's signings you get into because philosophically it makes sense for you and because it's going to give you future flexibility. And that's what I kind of want to start talking about here when it comes to the Curtis Samuel signing by the Buffalo Bills. I mean, it's kind of funny how deals get announced too. Like that's one of my favorite things about free agency. We got to see a little bit of this with the Von Miller signing. Last year, Von Miller shot a, you know, had a camera crew follow him around and shot his free agency, or 2 years ago. And he showed kind of what his free agency courtship period was like. You know, he's on vacation and he's talking to his agent and he's got different people calling him and he's got Josh Allen on the phone trying to lure him here. And then one of the things that always stuck with me was the conversation between him and his agent talking about what the deal was going to look like on the ticker when it came across on ESPN. And it did stick with me because when you look at the way deals are framed by the media, it's always different. Like when they said that it was going to be Curtis Samuel, the way it was originally framed to everybody was a 3-year, $30 million contract. And everybody's eyes bulged because that's a lot of coin. And when you think about it, you go, Curtis Samuel? Curtis Samuel's worth, he's a $30 million receiver. What are we doing? But as always is said, it's the structure of the contract that matters. And so essentially, when you look at the breakdown of it, it's a year-by-year deal. You can kind of, you've got some easy outs. It's actually not that big of a deal when you look at the structure of the contract. Then you think about the player. And, you know, if you're a film junkie, if you're a analytics guy, you know, I think it was Matt Harmon with the wide receiver stuff. He's talking all about how this guy wins on almost all of his, like, all of these really, really important routes. The things that stand out that are really important to what the Buffalo Bills haven't had. The type of wide receiver who can do a lot of the things that we haven't had a wide receiver that could do successfully. I mean, I think we thought Isaiah McKenzie was going to be one of these players, and it just didn't come to fruition. I mean, you're talking about a guy who can win on a dig route. Well, he does it at an 82% clip. That's pretty wild. It's like 82% on a dig route that he's getting success on. Curl routes, comeback routes, just devastating. And so it's just interesting when you put this together and you think about what that means for the Buffalo Bills. Like they specifically targeted this guy. And now it's funny because on one hand, a part of me wanted to balk at it because I know from having him on my fantasy football teams, he's always questionable. Always questionable. I'm just like, well, can I play him? Can I not play him? What's going to happen? And it's funny, I think Nate Geary from WJR 550, like, he perfectly encapsulated everything I was feeling when I saw it. And he was basically like, you know, at first glance, how did he put it? So Curtis Samuel, my head went right to, quote, good player, but I feel like he's kind of old and always hurt. Turns out he's 27, has missed exactly one game in two seasons. Interesting little player here. Like, that's the... that's the kind of thing where I think we all get our heads around this concept that you hear like, oh, well, he had injuries. And he has. You know, if you guys want to go to bangedupbills.com, you can see that he... There's a difference between... You've seen the movie Miracle. There's a difference between hurt and injured. He's always hurt. He's never injured. He's just always hurt. And I don't know what that does, right? Like, I don't know what that means in terms of what his career as a Buffalo Bill is going to be like. What I do know is that Sean McDermott really likes availability in his players. But at the same time, this is a guy with a skill set that you haven't... It's kind of like it's the thing. You wanted Deontay Hardy to be this, but he couldn't be it. You wanted Isaiah McKenzie to be this, but he couldn't be it. This is their latest foray in trying to find a smaller wide receiver with a lot of speed who they can use in a bunch of different ways, whether it's from the slot, from the outside, whether it's from in the backfield on sweeps and reverses and just all sorts of things that they can do to try and just give themselves as many options as possible with speed on the offense. At the same time, you're not getting a blue chip, this is going to be the guy who transforms the wide receiver room. And so I obviously I don't think our fan base is dumb enough to believe that, but at the same time, I see some of you out there on Twitter. I absolutely believe that some of you are dumb enough for this. What I do think it gives us is flexibility when you look at the rest of free agency and when you look at the draft. I look at the draft because when you take a look at what's out there and you just look at the top prospects, like if you run it down through the first, let's call it the first 15 receivers, okay? You go down the list, 6'4", 6', 6'3", 6'4", 6'4", 6', 6'3", 6', 6'1", 6', 6'4", 6'2", 6'3", 6'1", 6'1", 6'2". You have to literally go all the way down. Like now you're talking about like third round talents, maybe fourth round talents, Jacob Cowing, Anaya Smith. All of the wide receivers in this class are big. There is a lot of size at the top of this draft board for wide receivers. And so when you see a signing like this, it doesn't necessarily mean that they've decided, hey, this is it. We're not going to pursue anything. We're not going to go out there in free agency, and if there's a deal to be made, we're not going to pitch somebody. You also have to look at it and say, like, look, there was a guy out there. There was a Mike Williams. A Mike Williams who was available, who you could argue, if Keenan Allen hadn't been on the Chargers, Mike Williams is probably a number one. He's probably your number one, and he was a high first-round draft pick. He's got the physical talents to do it. He had the college pedigree to be that guy. So with that in mind, you look at the fact that they prioritize the signing of a guy like Samuel over even trying to make a foray into the Mike Williams thing. I think what that tells you is they're happy not chasing a big wide receiver in free agency because this class is loaded with size, and that's probably something that they're going to be looking at, right? Kind of tips their hand on the fact that they like that. Now, I took that idea. I cribbed it from Ryan Lacel, if I'm going to be honest. But he's not here to defend himself. In fact, he'll be joining us next week. So he's just going to have to deal with the fact that I stole it. Just the concept that they like the size. But it makes sense. I mean, when you go down it, like people think Xavier Worthy is a small wide receiver. I've seen that a lot of that discourse, too, when people say things like, well, Xavier Worthy, he's Tyreek Hill, and he's this, he's that. The guy's 6'1". I don't know if anybody realizes that. I don't think Stephon Diggs is much. I think he's shorter than that. I don't know. I'm just saying. So it also tells you that if they're looking for a big wide receiver, they really do believe they can either find one already on the roster or they like the class. And that volume of them available is what's going to be important to keep our eyes on as the offseason progresses and we get into this thing of visits. Who visits the Bills? Who did they meet with at the combine? Who have they been tied to in terms of the conversations that Do you remember the days when the Bills used to only draft guys they brought in? I'm really happy that we've moved on from that. But at the same time, I mean, it is nice kind of at least knowing what you're thinking. You know, when you hear the wide receiver out of Oregon, Troy Franklin, that they had a private workout already scheduled with him. Okay. That tells you something. Troy Franklin is one of those guys who, if you're looking at wide receivers, is supposed to be like a, what do they say? He's probably like the 40th best player in the draft. Like they're saying he's probably a second round draft pick. It's interesting you'd be meeting with guys who are probably going to be there in this second round. Now, it'll be even more interesting to see if that trend continues. Because if you want to talk about where they should go in the draft, and you're talking about how you use, I mean, this is Brandon Bean's philosophy. Every single year, he's utilizing free agency to set up the draft so that they can do what's really in the long-term best interest for the team. Well, if that's the goal, and you've brought in a Curtis Samuel, and you've done all these things to kind of bit piece bolster the roster, then I have to wonder if the play at pick number 28, and maybe even with a slight trade up in the first round, kind of like what we did with Dalton Kincaid, isn't to try and trade up for a defensive end. I know. Defensive end. Another defensive lineman, another front seven player in the first round of the draft. All of you are going to lose your collective minds when it happens. There's going to be screaming. People are going to be just absolutely losing it, whether it's social media. I'm sure it's like my buddy's throwing a draft party. I'm sure someone will go outside and scream profanity and just into the stars. Because they're upset over the fact that the Buffalo Bills didn't take a wide receiver with their first round pick. But you have to look at where the value is right now. I'm looking at a chart, right? I'm looking at a chart, and it's a breakdown from SportTrack.com of all of the defensive ends who have signed contracts this offseason. Now, the Buffalo Bills are a team that, by virtue of the fact that they traded away Boogie Basham, who, let's face it, probably never should have been drafted in the first place, but they traded him away for a bag of peanuts, and now they're sitting here going, shit, we doubled down on defensive end because we thought this was going to be the thing that got us over the hump. Turns out, it didn't work that way. And now you're stuck. You are absolutely stuck at a position where you have Von Miller, who you can probably get out of his deal with some relative ease next year, or at least in the coming years, you can probably bypass a bunch of this and you can get him off the roster, especially if he's not producing. If he never makes it back to form, that's it. You just take your lumps and you move on. But that doesn't do you any favors in terms of what the roster looks like today. Our Lads Bills, again, it's one of my favorite websites to use because it's very straightforward, cut and dry. You take a look at our defensive end depth chart. What do we have? We've got Greg Rousseau. We've got Von Miller. We've got Casey Duhill, which we're going to talk about a little bit later tonight. And A.J. Epenesa, Kingsley Jonathan, and something called Cameron Klein. Like, that's it. You only have three defensive tackles on the roster. Like, this is a problem. Your defensive line is depleted. Now, maybe you can find defensive tackles later in free agency. You can flesh out your roster if you don't land a rookie. It allows you to leave your options open with a runway to getting a player and getting them on the field sooner rather than later. But realistically, do you want to keep having to go fishing for defensive ends? Is it really a place where you as a Bills fan think it's smart to be? I mean, I'm looking at this right now. Some of the deals that were signed, they're all short-term contracts. All short-term contracts. I'm looking at guys like Jonathan Greenard, okay? Leonard Williams. Leonard Williams is 29 years old. He's going to be 30. He just signed a three-year deal with $43 million guaranteed. Danielle Hunter, going to be 30 years old when the season starts. $48 million guaranteed on a two-year contract. Za'Darius Smith is 32 years old when the season starts. He's getting $12 million guaranteed on a two-year, $23 million deal. Now, is Za'Darius Smith the Za'Darius Smith he used to be? I don't know. Nobody knows. Meanwhile, you've got other teams at the opposite end of the spectrum that are saying, okay, the second that there's a player who becomes available, the second that there's a player who, young, up and coming, had some injuries, things didn't work out with the team that drafted him, but we still believe in his upside, you end up like Yader Gross-Matos, who's 26 years old, signs almost the same deal Za'Darius Smith did, you know, $12.3 million guaranteed, with a cap at $18 million. That's a lot of money for a guy who's like his career high is five sacks. You're betting the farm that this guy is going to continue to grow and that you know how to use him in your scheme. And if you're wrong, that's kind of an expensive gamble for a guy who's just going to be another guy in your rotation. Like when I looked at that, even the AJ Epenesa deal, which we all, I think as fans kind of agreed, this is reasonable. It's still bullshit money. It's bullshit money for a guy who has 6.5 sacks. Because what if he's just like that guy? What if he's that guy who's good because of everybody else who was on that line? The Floyds, Floyd, Rousseau, the other talent that was out there around him. And he was just allowed to come in and capitalize every now and again. How do we know that his production is going to continue? What if he is just a bit player and he is nothing other than what we've seen from him throughout his career? Let's say he tops out at, we average his totals, he ends up at 5 sacks at the end of the year. You will have paid, you know, let's say he's okay against the run. He's not, because he's never been great. He's been okay. He makes a couple timely plays. He bats some balls down. And you look at that and you go, well, that wasn't the worst money we've ever spent for $10 million guaranteed over the next 2 years. No, it's not terrible money. But at the same time, you could go into the NFL draft and you can say, hey, if there's a guy like a Latu or a, you know, what is his name? Chopa. What are these guys' names? Anytime that you have a name that's not a real name, it's like an activity like a Chop or a Spanky or a... Like, you sound like a little rascal. And I don't know if I can trust that. Chop Robinson, I believe, is his name. Like, I'm just pulling up the depth chart now, the big board, just so I can see who's out here. Because, again, when I hear names like that, like, I'm not one of these people who... Like, I don't study this stuff. I know Alabama has a couple guys in the top, like, 50 that are supposed to be good edge players. Now, I don't know if that'll translate to a 4-3 necessarily, especially with the archetype that we have, where they kind of want their defensive ends to be big, but sort of lean, have a little flexibility, but be able to set an edge, play the run, push the pocket. Yeah, Chop Robinson. But I'll tell you what. If you're sitting there at the 28th pick and you go, I could take a wide receiver who's the fifth best, or I could take the fourth best or fifth best edge rusher at a position where if I'm right, like if I'm correct on this, I just saved myself millions of dollars, millions of dollars. And for the next at least four years, maybe even five. Because free agency favors defensive ends over most other positions. It's quarterbacks, guys who sack the quarterback, guys who catch touchdowns from the quarterback, guys who protect the quarterback. Like those, like there's a hierarchy of who gets paid, and that's it. So wouldn't like Brandon Bean has kind of proven, if you look at the Bills draft history, I think that got brought up in one of our previous shows that like everybody talks about, oh my God, we've drafted all these wide receivers and it's time to draft like a premier. I don't know. I've seen that like the Bills have drafted, well, what was it? 7 wide receivers and only 6 defensive line players. And one of them was Basham and didn't pan out. Go look at where those guys are taken. Like they haven't taken a wide receiver in the top rounds, but then also look at who those trench players were. A lot of them, like, Torrance panned out, okay? That's great. in the 22 draft, Elam, Cook, Bernard, Shakir, Ariza, Benford, Tenuta, like they waited until the sixth round to take a trench player. 2021, they took Rousseau and Basham, Spencer Brown, Tommy Doyle. They went trench heavy because the idea was if we can hit on at least two of these, maybe three, we are set for a significant period of time where we don't have to go out and spend money on backup options, potentially even starter options. The year before that, it was AJ Epenesa in the second round, and then nothing for the rest of the class. You go back to 2019, Ed Oliver, Cody Ford. Like, that's it. That's what they did that year. Oh, and Daryl Johnson, the pterodactyl, as we used to call him. Like, we've reached the point with Basham failing the way that he failed and the fact that we don't have another pass rusher, right? Like, it's been Rousseau back in 21. We haven't even drafted another pass rusher. So it's time. And I think in that way, you could eschew just based on the amount of size and speed. And I'm really, that's why I'm interested to see these visits as they come up. Because that's where your eyes should be. What types of players are they meeting with ahead of the draft? And take a look at where those players are slotted to be drafted. Because I don't think you're going to be, I won't be shocked. And for those of you like holding your breath, stomping your feet like a two-year-old, waiting for the wide receiver pick in the first round, don't be shocked when you watch them prioritize, all things being equal, prioritize the defensive end position, pass rusher, specialist, whatever, you know, edge player, whatever you want to call it, over another skill position player. Just because the value isn't there. Like, if you want to, apples to apples, putting them next to each other. Also, the other thing you have to consider is the roster can still change. The Bills have about $8 million in cap space today. This is according to Spotrac. But $8 million. And when you get into the market, you know, I was just talking about all the absurd deals that have gone on for defensive ends and pass rushers and just how much money's being spent. I think it's kind of telling that there are guys out there signing guys. Clelin Ferrell. We live in a world where Clelin Ferrell has a job. Carl Lawson doesn't. Yannick Ngakoue doesn't. He's only 28 years old. I know that surprises a lot of people, but he's 28 years old. Charles Harris, Tyus Bowser, like Bud Dupree. There are players out there. Jadeveon Clowney doesn't have a job, and he's the guy who somehow perpetually just keeps falling into lucrative one-year contracts. None of these guys have jobs, which tells you they're all now just waiting. Probably waiting for the draft. And once that comes, a second wave of free agency is going to start. And there's going to be guys who, maybe there's a Carl Lawson deal out there to be had. Maybe it's a guy like Emmanuel Ogba. They like the fact that he's big and that he's pretty stout against the run. Maybe they think he'd translate to a 4-3. But at the same time, do you want to be in that boat? Do you want to draft a bunch of wide receivers at the top of this draft, skill players, maybe go get a tackle prospect because you don't like the idea of Spencer Brown or you don't trust that we'll be able to re-sign him for the kind of contract he's going to require if he has a good year? You want to be out there trying to sign 28 to 31-year-old defensive ends for that kind of money when you could just do the smart thing, take a swing at it right there in the first round. You're taking your best shot at it, and if you're wrong, at least the guy doesn't cost you anything. God. This tequila is delicious. It is nice. You know, now that I've been doing this for a few minutes, it's been kind of nice not having to look over and just see Chris's stupid face pointing at his watch, being like, it's time. It's time. Shut up. I'll do what I want. It is nice. It is also nice recording this on the day of the NCAA tournament because at least you know you have something to watch all night long. This has been fun. I like the fact that I kind of get to expand on some of my ideas a little bit more than I might otherwise without Chris interjecting with a stupid joke. Look, I just think that it's one of the few positions that with Von Miller not being what he used to be, and probably never, I mean, if we're being realists, you can be an optimist and say that Von Miller will bounce back, but I don't know what that looks like. Him bouncing back might make him an average pass rusher after what we saw last year. Like, that was embarrassing. And so if at a position where you don't have an explosive player yet, you look at our passing attack, we've got some guys who are capable of explosive plays. You've got a Khalil Shakir who just continues to get better every single year. And I think he deserves a shot at more targets this year. You've got an offense that now has a Curtis Samuel in it, who himself has produced some explosive plays. You've got Stephon Diggs, who, as long as he's not nicked up and not dropping balls down the field that should have been caught, maybe winning you playoff games, when he's not pulling that kind of shit, he is capable of producing explosive plays. Right now, defensive end is like one of the more important positions on any football team, and you do not have a player who can promote explosive plays. That's it. That's all I need to see. Go get me a home run, a potential home run hitter at every position, because that's how you become a dangerous football team. We have killers at linebacker. We have two solid defensive tackles already on the roster, even though we've only got three. Two of them are great, and we know that. Safety, I mean, that's a conversation. It's a conversation for our next podcast. Well, I say ours. It's just going to be me down here with a fresh glass of tequila. But at least we know, right? We know that we're not as old as we used to be. We're probably a little bit more athletic than when durable than we used to be. And so you look around the roster. We've got James Cook at running back. He's right up there analytically with the great white hope, Christian McCaffrey. So what else? What else? Like, if you're looking for a home run hitter, which is what you should be doing in the first round, I don't care where in the first round, you should be looking for a guy who you think can come in and make explosive plays. Why? Then defensive end is the only one that makes sense. Because you're not, it's not going to get better. I remember looking at the metric of where pass rushers, it was actually given to me by Paul Wineski and Mario Granata from Hashtag Sports years ago. They pointed me to this paper this guy did, and he compiled all of the draft picks at defensive end and pass rusher over like a 10-year span. And what they found is that defensive ends and pass rushers taken in the top 10 picks outproduced the just over the course of their rookie deal, outproduced in terms of sacks, quarterback hits, and quote-unquote disruptive plays, outpaced the guys taken for, top 10 compared to 20 to 32 by almost, I want to say it was like something around 70 or 80%. They almost doubled them up. And then if you go outside the first round and you get to the second round where you're talking about the AJ Epineses of the world, those guys, it was almost like you're falling off a cliff, because the guys at the back half of the first round were still more productive than those guys by like a 60-something percent margin. And so in that way, you're hurting yourself, if that's a thing your team needs, to wait on it. Pass rusher is not a position that, when everyone goes running back, you can get one of those. Wide receiver, this draft is full of wide receivers, you can get one. Oh, centers, guards, like maybe a center in the late first round, but never a guard. You can get those elsewhere in the draft. You know what you can't get elsewhere in the draft is pass rushers. The numbers prove it. History's proved it. The Buffalo Bills have proved it. So can we please stop this? And if this is what we need, because if we need something that makes it easier to let go of Von Miller, for fuck's sake, if that's all I get out of this, is that it's that much easier to let go of Von Miller, then I'll fucking take it, okay? I will take it. I will personally run that ticket to the podium if you're telling me that you can get me something that not only might make this team better come playoff time, but that makes it that much easier to get Von Miller out of here with his stupid triangle haircut And like these idiot hats, like, you're not Cam Newton. Hell, Cam Newton, like, say what you want about the guy. Like, I saw that video, dude. He roughed those guys up. Like, imagine trying to jump Cam Newton. Let's talk about this for a second. Can you imagine, like, once Twitter got a hold of that whole fracas, it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Just social media found out who the people were and just eviscerated these guys to a point where they had to deactivate and make their, like, Instagram private and stuff. And it was all just jokes. It was just the internet talking shit to these four guys going, man, how are you going to get beat up by a dude wearing the Hogwarts sorting hat? That dude had he was literally wearing a hat with a feather in it and beating up four people at the same time. Like, I'm pretty sure if you lose that fight and that dude's wearing that hat, you're not allowed to leave your home. Like, you're on, it's like a mandatory house arrest for 5 days, except the cops don't impose it. It's just society. Society says you pick a fight with a guy dressed like that and he beats you up, you got to stay indoors, brother. You got to shut it down for a few days. Work from home, call in sick. I don't care what. Don't even go to work. They might fire you. They might fire you not because of the bad publicity, but because they're embarrassed to be that close to someone who would get mollywopped like that. I still remember the time when he signed up with the Patriots and he showed up for his physical and he was wearing a black and white striped romper with all kinds of, like, Johnny Depp bracelets and this hat that looked like slashes. And we ran a caption contest for it. I was like, someone tell me what Cam Newton's doing right now. Best caption will win some Q42 stuff. The winner said that it looked like he was about to pull out an accordion and do a rendition of Hey Ya. And I don't know why, but that's still to this day. Sometimes I just stop what I'm doing and I think about that and I laugh. And then people think I'm an idiot because I'm usually, like, somewhere around me. It pops into my head. It's almost like that Scrubs thing where I have a daydream and then I start laughing and everyone's like, well, what the fuck's wrong with Drew? This isn't funny. We're talking about the collapse of a business here. Why is he laughing? No, I really do believe, getting back to this as we wrap the show, I think that all the people demanding a skill player, I used to be like you. I used to think that way. And now I'm taking a look around going, if we really want this team to be as well-rounded as possible, there's some pass rushers here that might make sense. And also, do you want to keep, if you're trying to become cap solvent as you move forward, since you can keep this competitive window open? You know, think about all the sacrifices we had to make this offseason. All of the players who used to be the carriers of the culture that was built here. Like, it's time. It's time to rebuild that culture. Do you want to be the team that's perpetually just spinning in new free agents that you're overpaying for? Or do you want to start building a new, young nucleus of this team? Well, I'll tell you what, you're going to need talent to do it. You're going to need cheap talent to do it. And you're going to need young guys who all look to Josh Allen. He's the alpha, but he also needs guys to help carry the banner. And you can't do that when you're a backup, right? It's like the people talking about Kyle Okposo being the Sabres captain. That's a joke. Because it's a great thing. You can clap in the locker room and you can give motivational speeches. If you can't go play and you can't also be a leader on the field, then I don't know what to tell you, brother. You're asking for trouble if those are the guys that you're going to get to a point where you're perpetually just bringing in free agents and making them captains. That's how you lose the culture of a franchise. That's how a thing like Sean McDermott built here in the early tenure of his career, that's how that fades and falls apart. You need to grow your own, retain your own. Well, this is a step in that direction. So, I firmly believe in it. I hope I've at least swayed some of you wide receiver happy individuals out there. And if not, well, it doesn't matter because I don't care what you think. Oh, God. And I'm going to hit you with one more sad trombone for the road. Guys, this has been a lot of fun, but I got to get out of here. I'm Drew Geer. That's not Chris Krueger. And this has been your Rock Pile Report.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.